This week on Out of Chicago, interviews with Angie McMonigal, John Crouch, and Nick Ulivieri. Well, welcome to Out of Chicago. I'm Chris Smith, and this is the show where we talk about Chicago photography and we talk about city photography of all kinds. Today, we have a special show. We have three different interviews. It's three of the presenters from the Out of Chicago Conference, which is taking place this week. So, we have interviews with Angie McMonigal, John Crouch, and Nick Ulivieri. Now, Angie McMonigal and I shot down at University of Chicago, and we went up onto the rooftop of one of the buildings to find a quiet spot, and we did our interview there. John Crouch and I were down at Buckingham Fountain. We were able to get a shot there, and when we did the interview there. And Nick Ulivieri and I got together over Skype. So you got three interviews here, and I think you're going to enjoy all three of them. They have kind of similar styles, yet very different at the same time. If you haven't seen their work, please go see the show notes and check out their sites. So our first interview is with Angie McMonigal. You may know her from her photos on Out of Chicago or from her own site, angiemcmonigal.com. She specializes in fine art, architecture, abstract shots, and they're very interesting. She has her own very unique style. You kind of see one of her shots and you know that it's Angie McMonigal that took it. And she's great. You'll love the interview. So here we go. Well, hello, Angie.
Hello, Chris.
Thank you so much for coming on my show.
Thanks for having me.
You know, you're my favorite photographer.
Okay, that's news to me, but thanks.
And you know that I love having you on the Out of Chicago site and all of the images that you take for Wendy's posts. They're always wonderful. So we're going to talk a little bit about your photography. You do mostly, well, how would you define your photography?
Well, most of what I shoot is architecture, architectural details, sometimes the urban landscape, but I much prefer the architectural work and the more detailed view of the architecture.
Yeah, I remember Valerie Jardin, she said to me, she said, you know, never take a photo of the entire building, and I don't think you ever have you?
Not very often. It's pretty rare, that's for sure.
You're always looking for the patterns, you're looking for interesting shapes, and you really make, like, artwork of the architecture itself, right?
That's my goal.
That's your
goal. I think that's what I'm hoping to do, so I don't know if it comes across that way. I have at least gotten to that point, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely you have. By the way, you might hear some construction. We're here at the University of Chicago. Angie and I are shooting some of the great architecture here, and I'm trying to steal all of her shots, you know, basically let her shoot and then just look and see exactly where she was standing and shoot the same thing from the same spot. So hopefully I've made that work.
I don't think so. Not that you didn't get it. Oh, God, delete that part.
No, we're not deleting any of this. That's already up there. It's too late. Did I tell you this was live?
No. No, you said you could delete out these bad parts.
Oh, well, we'll see. So, Angie, tell me, how do you find your subjects? Like, how do you figure out what you want to go shoot?
Well, being in Chicago, a lot of it is just being familiar with the city and, you know, driving around, walking around, having lived here for most of the last 14 years. There's just certain areas that and buildings that I know that are interesting. Sometimes it'll be new architecture that I've driven by and see. Other times there are friends, other photographers who see things and they're nice enough to let me know that there's this building that might work with the kind of style of photography that I do. I'd say that's most of it. I do follow some architecture firms' Facebook pages and Twitter feeds and some other architectural blog sites and stuff, and Wendy's articles on Out of Chicago are always, I think, a good resource as...
With your images?
Yes, and yours. But I think she has a lot of knowledge of the city and has good tips on places to go and things like that. So, I don't know. I'd say that's usually how I find work or things to photograph. If I'm in other cities, I actually tend to do research ahead of time. I'll do like Google searches on notable architecture in the city, or you know, maybe search like Google search images and things like that. So it's a little bit different when I'm in other cities versus here, home.
And were you a fan of architecture before this, or was it photography that got you into shooting architecture?
I would say it's photography that got me into shooting architecture. It took me a long time to figure out what it was that I liked to photograph. I'm not from a big city. I didn't grow up in a big city, so it wasn't something that was familiar to me, like in an everyday kind of environment. I think maybe that's why I got more interested in it. It was new and exciting and something that I wasn't used to seeing, so I was kind of drawn to that aspect of it.
All right, so like today, when we were walking around the campus, there were a lot of times when I'd be looking up at the buildings, and I'd be like, oh, that's okay, another building, and all of a sudden you would just stop dead in your tracks, and you're like, oh my goodness, I could tell in your, you know, in your expression, like, you had found a shot. What is it about a certain building that makes you say, okay, I got to stop and look at this a little bit longer and shoot this?
Well, as we were talking about earlier, a lot of what I photograph is, or am drawn to, is more modern architecture, is like the clean lines and geometry of buildings. And, you know, we were speaking about how you like the older architecture.
Well, I like it all. And you said, no, I only like the new stuff. Isn't that what you said?
No, I said I appreciate the older architecture. I just don't.
I remember
I don't
your words.
See it.
You said the older architecture would be nice to stare at for a little while, but I wouldn't need to take a photo. Yes.
Right. That's true. I don't often make images of older architecture. If I do, I don't tend to, they don't show up on my website, I'll say that. They'll show up on Flickr, because everything shows up on Flickr for me. But a lot of times with stopping and like being taken with a particular building, it's more about seeing something simplistic and minimalistic. Like I tend to look for lines in the geometry and minimalism. That's just kind of how I see things. A lot of times with the older architecture, there's too much going on for me. It's too ornate. It's too busy. It's just not the way that I see things. So that's why I'm not drawn to it as much.
So when you're going for that minimal look, I imagine you are really working hard to get yourself in the right position, to get yourself in the right place, to kind of eliminate a lot of distracting elements. Is that a big part of what's going through your mind when you're getting a shot?
Yeah, there's a lot of standing around and staring straight up into the sky.
Oh yeah, we got some photos of that today.
Yeah, there's a lot of that that goes on. And tiny little steps in one direction or another. It's like trying to line myself up as perfectly as I can with how I want the image to come out in the end. It looks a little strange because I'm literally taking like millimeter steps in one direction or another as opposed to making huge movements. But I really do think a lot of times to get, you know, that perfect shot, or as perfect as you can make it, it's more about small movements and adjustments as opposed to huge changes in your perspective.
Yeah, I remember when I was a new photographer just thinking, okay, I've set up my tripod, I'm in the spot. We'll talk about tripods in a couple minutes, but I got my tripod set up, I'm in my spot, and now I just need to angle my camera the right way. And I've just learned over the years that moving a little bit left or right, just to, like you said, a couple of inches can make a huge difference in the image.
Right.
Like what, just go one level deeper. What are you looking for when you're moving those 2 inches over? Do you want lines to line up? What is it?
For me, a lot of times, yeah, I like symmetry in a lot of my images. So it's a matter of just placing myself as firmly in the center as I can and getting my camera lined up as much as I can. I tend to put lines to converge in the corner of my frame a lot of times. I like to line things up in that way, so it's just a matter of slight movements and adjustments to get to that perfect, you know, symmetry or line.
I do know, yeah. Yeah, I've seen it in your shots. Yeah, and sometimes I think people don't understand when they see a really good photo that it may have taken you a lot of effort to make it look as simple as it is.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes I think minimalism, whether in photography or painting or art, can sometimes be harder than the busier scenes because there's less for your eye to look at. When you're looking at a scene with a ton of stuff going on, there's a lot of things to look at and take in. When there's a minimalistic scene, there's very little to look at. So what's there needs to be as perfect as possible.
Mm-hmm. And I know everyone's looked at good photos and have said, God, I could take that. And sometimes you just don't realize how much effort, how much work it takes to make a simple image.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so we're all on the same page. So I'm going to ask you, to give away all your secrets.
I don't know that there's too many secrets to give away.
So the question is, well, to set it up, my shots that I take and I put on Flickr, pretty much all of my shots, you can find 100 or 200 of a very similar shot, but your images are very, very unique. What do you think it is that makes your images, that sets them apart, that makes them so unique?
First of all, thanks. I don't know. I look at my images and sometimes I don't know that they're unique. You know, it's my way of seeing. I don't know what sets them apart other than spending a whole lot of years shooting and photographing a lot of stuff and figuring out what it is that you love to photograph and focusing the majority of your attention on that subject matter and that particular way of seeing things. That doesn't mean that I don't shoot a lot of other random stuff from time to time, but when I go out with the intention to shoot for the day, like Wednesdays are my day for photography right now.
If you want to find Angie, go to Chicago on Wednesday.
That's true.
You'll see her.
I have two kids. I only get one day a week. So when I go out and shoot, I have a tendency to like pick one building and that's what I focus on. And that's where all of my attention is focused for the day. When I travel, it's different. You know, I'll shoot landscapes. I'll shoot other things that I don't typically shoot. But that's because my mindset's kind of in a different place than I'm not as focused as I am when I know I'm going to shoot one particular thing.
Yeah, no, that's good advice, because usually I go out and do like what we did today, which was we hit like 8 places and we got kicked out of like 3 of them and 4 of them we didn't get any good pictures, but it still turned out to be a good day. So it's not just me that thinks that your photos are unique. There's a lot of people that have found your work online, whether it be different hotels that want to put up all your work or different websites or whatever. What is it that you do to try and be discovered? You know, all photographers want their images to be seen. What do you do to help get your name out there?
I don't know that I do anything extra special or different than anyone else. The majority of what I do is social media. Facebook is probably the place that I am the most in terms of social media. Google Plus is probably behind that. There's Twitter, Stark Magazine, 1X, National Geographic. They have this Your Shot page that anyone can contribute to. I'd say that that's the majority of where I've been found and just been lucky enough to have some of the right people kind of come across my work. Out of Chicago, Chris asking me to help contribute to architectural.
Yeah, of course we want your photos in there.
A year or two ago, that has actually been a huge help, and a lot of, you know, I've gotten some recognition and some jobs from people seeing my work on there. So,
well, thanks for saying that. Yeah, did you guys hear that out there? If you're an amazing photographer, you should help with Out of Chicago. That's right.
That is right. It's been good for me, so I can at least vouch for me.
Good. I had a really good question. What was it? No, I forgot it. This is the part we edit out, is that right? This is going to be way too much work. All right, so the first thing I remember was shooting with Angie was a year or so ago, and we went out and, what was it, the Hotel Burnham that we were shooting?
Yeah.
And I just remember I had my tripod, I had my super wide-angle lens, I was, like, ready to go, I had, like, 4 other lenses, and Angie shows up. It was the first time I'd actually met her in person, and she's got one camera, one lens, and her strap around her neck. She kind of looked a little bit like a tourist, but what I remember is that at the end of the day, I had worked so hard to get these photos that I really liked, one or two of them, and she was kind of walking around me the whole day and shooting little details everywhere, here and there, and I'm like, oh, you know what? I've got such better photos than she does. And when I saw them afterward, I was just so disappointed. It was like the two things that I'd worked really hard at, I didn't like them, and all of her shots, a lot of her shots turned out great. But that was one thing that really made me think a lot after that. It really did. Multiple times thinking over and over that maybe I don't always want to bring a tripod, that maybe I want to shoot a little bit more like you do. You almost never use a tripod, is that right?
That's right. I actually hate using a tripod. Sorry. I do. I'll use it on occasion, but for me, I feel like it kind of gets in the way of me seeing and setting up images. I can't tell you how many times I've looked through the camera holding it and seen, like, the perfect shot. And then I get my tripod out, set the thing up, get my camera on there, and I can't ever get back in the right position. And it never lines up the way that I was seeing it, and I just get frustrated. So, for me, a lot of it comes from that, and I just hate carrying that thing around. And if you ever go to interior, do some interior architectural work, so many places don't allow it. So it's just like this other thing that you're lugging around, and it's getting in the way of holding the camera.
That's a good point. Well, yeah, we went to like the Art Institute, and it was like, well, now I've got my huge tripod, I've got to check it. And you're like, well, come on, let's go, Chris. Right? So yeah, it does make it so that it's a little more hard to get around. And it was because of that that I really wanted to end up getting a mirrorless camera, that I got the Olympus camera. And I wanted the image stabilization because I wanted to shoot more like you shoot. So it's something that I thought about a lot since we went out that one time. And so today on our shooting spree, I have no tripod. Well, it's a grill. A pod. Let's let the microphones on right now.
You can't ever go out with just none of it, right?
Well, there's got to be.
You need something. You need
just in case. You never know. What if you need to make a long exposure? You never know. So, yeah. Maybe that'll be a challenge for myself. No tripods at all. I never used it today, right?
You didn't. That's
all right.
True.
Okay, no. Thank you. All right. The next question I kind of know the answer to already, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Your images look awesome. They're almost all, well, not almost all, but I love your black and white images and your color images. But what type of post-processing are you doing to get that really cool look on your photos?
I don't do a ton of post-processing, but I usually start in Lightroom and do kind of basic adjustments there, like white balance correction if needed, cropping. I always crop in Lightroom. Some minor adjustments with contrast and the blacks and whites and highlights and things like that. And then
that makes a huge difference though, right?
Huge.
The blacks,
I mean,
and the whites.
You can honestly do 90% of what you need to do in Lightroom, if not all of it. There's images that I never even take into Photoshop. Usually when I convert to black and white, I do the conversion in Photoshop just because that's what I'm used to. I'll use like curves adjustments and things like that. But then I always come back to Lightroom and do more adjustments after that and more contrast and things like that. I don't know how many of you listening have looked at my images, but
if you haven't, shame on you. We'll have a link to her site in the show notes.
But with the black and white, there's a fair amount of contrast. I like the contrast, so that's a lot of back and forth between Lightroom and Photoshop to get that.
No, yeah, and that's me too. It's mostly Lightroom, and then just go to Photoshop when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Except it sounds like you do your conversion to black and white in Photoshop as well. Have you tried it in Lightroom?
Yeah, I've tried it in Lightroom, and sometimes I do it in Lightroom. The thing that I like about Lightroom, and I'm sure you can do it in Photoshop. I'm the least technologically savvy person on earth, but the thing I like about Lightroom black and white conversions is all the color sliders that you can adjust and play with to get different effects. You know,
like using different filters back in the day,
right,
like a red
yeah.
filter or whatever to accentuate different colors. Yeah.
Exactly. It's exactly like that. Sure, you can do it in Photoshop too, but for some reason, when I convert that way, I tend to do that in Lightroom.
Yeah, it's amazing. We both were saying that we have Silver Effects Pro and we love it, but that we don't use it a whole lot. To me, the Silver Effects Pro is great to go and look at presets and to see, hey, that's a great idea. I never thought about doing it that way. But you can do pretty much all of that in Lightroom and in Photoshop.
Right, exactly.
All right, here's what I need to start doing on the podcast all the time. This isn't a new segment. It's just a new thing that I need to do more of. And that is, what are your favorite places? What are your very favorite places to shoot in Chicago?
I have a lot of favorite places.
We've got time. I've got lots of room on my memory card.
Buildings in particular. I really do like that wood pavilion that's in Lincoln Park, the one designed by Studio Gang. I actually love all of their architecture. Aqua is another favorite building. The Millennium Park is good. I can't wait till they finish that Maggie Daly Park that they're doing over mm-hmm. there, because I love the BP Bridge and I haven't had a chance to photograph it as much as I'd like to, because that's been under construction forever. But, I mean, the Bean, we all know, has been shot a million times and seen in every way possible.
I'm sure you've done it better than anyone, though.
I'm not so sure about that. But that's fun. Pritzker Pavilion, I'm kind of obsessed with it only because I can't get a good image of it. It's one of those buildings or structures that drives me crazy, but at the same time, I love it. I love Frank Gehry's work. I recently was in LA and shot the Walt Disney Concert Hall, and it's probably one of my favorite buildings I've ever photographed, ever. for getting out of Chicago, I also love the Milwaukee Art Museum.
That's a perfect one, because anyone in Chicago can make a day trip of it. It's easy.
Yeah,
it's a great one. Yeah, your photos that you have from the inside there, like with your kids especially, I love those photos.
Thanks. Yeah. Actually, I like shooting that building from the inside more than the outside, and a lot of what I shoot tends to be outdoors, but with that museum in particular, I actually like the interior. There's a lot of different takes that you can get on the architecture, and street photography in there too. If you're into street photography, there's cool opportunities.
In the museum?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you have people wandering around and you can get unique.
Street photography scares me. I don't know.
Well, me too.
Museum photography.
I'm not the person to talk to about street, but.
No, that's great. Those are, I mean, here's a weird question. Do you think that you love all those places in Chicago because you've gotten amazing images there? Or do you think that you really liked them and that was why you were able to get such good images?
I guess I would say that I really liked them and spent the time looking at them and trying to see as many different perspectives of that building from different angles and different vantage points, different locations, and zooming in closer on details and spending the time. I think the more time I spend on a building, the better images I get, because I'm actually focusing on, you know, more, you know, smaller nuances and things that you don't notice when you just do a quick walk by and, you know, shoot them. But, you know, the Prisker Pavilion, I think I have one image that I actually like that I've made of that, and I've shot that thing dozens of times. And
have
I've
you
made maybe one good shot.
Have
I'm
you tried
with.
Maybe using a tripod?
I haven't, actually.
You might think about
maybe
that.
Maybe I should.
All right, so did I let you finish your question? Your
no,
answer?
I'm, yeah, you let, you're good.
All right. So you guys know that Angie is one of the presenters at the conferences here at the Out of Chicago Conference. Would you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be presenting on?
Well, the plan is to talk about finding...
Why would it not be the plan?
Well, I do have a plan. Is to talk about finding your vision in photography. And this is something that I felt like was something worthwhile to discuss, because it's something that I have struggled with and has taken me a very, very, very long time to figure out.
You're going to be telling people what camera settings to use, right?
Right. It's all technical. Technical. No, there will be nothing technical about my presentation.
No, it's perfect.
I'm the worst person to talk to about technical stuff. But
I'm sorry, so continue.
Anyway, it's the plan is to be to talk about vision and kind of figuring out how you see the world and your unique way of seeing things, and figuring out, you know, going through ways in which I came to figuring out what it is that I was trying to say with my work and how I saw things, and figuring out what it is that you do like to photograph and in what way you like to photograph the subject matter that is of most interest to you. So we'll talk about that, talk about creating series kind of that help you, you know, move along in that direction.
I know that I will be at your session, without a doubt. And I know it's not going to make you nervous at all,
no,
right?
No, not at all.
Yeah. So
Thanks, Chris.
I'm looking forward to your presentation. I'm looking forward to everybody else's presentation. I think it's going to be a great weekend.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for doing this interview on the... Well, I just realized this is the second rooftop interview in a row. This is the rooftop interview with Angie McMonagall now. So thank
Might
you very much.
Might be a new destination for you. That's all your interviews
yes,
on rooftops?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. That could be a new thing for the podcast. I like that.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris.
Yeah. You know, before you go, tell us, what's your website? Where's the best place for people to go? We'll have links and everything, but where's the best place for people to find you?
I'd say I'm most selective about my work that goes on my website, so angiemcmonagall.com, Facebook.
So angiemcmonagallwasavailable.com?
It was, yeah.
Because Chris Smith wasn't when I looked.
I'm shocked by that.
Yeah,
such
crazy.
An original name.
So angiemcmonagall.com, and what was the other thing you were going to say?
Facebook, there's a fair amount of stuff. Flickr is kind of my dumping ground, so if you want to see everything I've
And if
ever
we
shot,
search for you on there, we'll
head
find
over to
you.
Flickr.
Great. Okay, thank you so much, Angie.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, next up is John Crouch. Like I said, John and I were down at Buckingham Fountain, and he was getting some of his own architecture type shots, and we talked about his background in construction. John, he's got also just amazing abstract type shots of architecture, similar to Angie, but they both have their own unique feel to their shots, and they both go about it in actually a completely different way, which you're going to hear about in the interview. Here we go, John Crouch.
All right, we're here in Grant Park, right next to Buckingham Fountain. Kind of back in the trees is a little bit strange, but I'm out shooting with John Crouch, and he's going to tell us some things today about what he'll be teaching at the conference and a little bit about his background. So tell us how you kind of got into photography in the first place, John.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me here, Chris.
Of course.
Yeah, I've always been interested in kind of visual media, starting as a kid, TVs, movies, comic books, that sort of thing. But never really had a whole lot of time to pursue it through academic means or whatnot. I was an engineering major in college, which took up most of my time, which didn't leave much time for art classes or the like. And so once I got into the real world, I got a real job, and I needed some creative outlets. And so I looked at photography, and it was right around the time that Nikon was coming out with their first kind of consumer cameras in the late 90s, their digital cameras.
We try not to talk about Nikon on the show, but go ahead.
Okay, well.
I'm just kidding.
You know, a few years after that, I decided to get more serious with it, and Canon came out with the first SLR that I could afford. So I went Canon, so I'm a Canon guy, although I'm not really interested in the warring brand
thing. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, so about 2005, I started pursuing a little more seriously. I took some classes at the Chicago Photography Center when Richard Stromberg was still running it. They've parted ways these days, but they're both running great programs now, and I'd encourage anybody to check those out. That's where I started teaching, though. They saw my passion. They liked what they saw photographically, and I started teaching the Photo 2 classes over there for a while.
How long ago was that you started teaching?
That was probably 2007, I think, okay. 2006.
And you've been shooting about 15 years, you said, something like that?
Yeah, well, I got that first camera in 1999 and toyed around with it for a few years. So I've been shooting seriously for about 10 years.
Awesome. So tell us the types of things that you like to shoot. I know what you like to shoot, but tell us about it.
Sure. Well, it goes back to that engineering and construction background. I worked in construction jobs for a long time.
Yeah, tell us a little about the construction and then how that led into it.
Sure. My family had a construction business that was around Chicago for 75 years, and I was part of that for a little bit. The real benefit for me was it took me all over the city and the suburbs. I got to know the city like the back of my hand. I love this city. I love the neighborhoods. I love every nook and cranny, and it's really helped me be a good photographer here in Chicago, not only for finding the locations, but working with architects and seeing what their vision is, like their purest vision was when they come up with their concept drawings. And if I can kind of take a building and break it down into like just the essential components, then I've done my job well as an architectural photographer, and that's what I like to do. So the engineering background helps with that. I'm somewhat of a precise shooter at times, so my engineering background helps me with that, and then dealing with architects and developers and such helps me with the vision part of it.
And that's the type of stuff that you typically shoot, is architecture and...
Yeah, city landscapes, the urban scene, mm-hmm. If you will. It's not street photography necessarily, but I like shooting the city at all times of day, in all kind of conditions. To me, this can sound hokey as hell, but to me, the city is like one of mankind's greatest inventions. We wouldn't be a society without cities. We didn't start developing as a culture without cities. And so I'm somebody who likes to celebrate the city. I know that's kind of not necessarily a popular notion these days, but I like to celebrate it in my work. That's what I try to do.
Yeah, I think the people who listen to this show would totally agree. I mean, most photographers would want to go to Yellowstone, Yosemite, or wherever, but Chicago... And there's actually more subjects here, more variety in a city like Chicago to shoot.
Those other places are okay. They're all right.
Hey, I'm not saying that. I'm not knocking anywhere, but it's kind of on the same level. I mean, it's the same sort of thing. To be in a city and to capture the essence of that city would be the same thing as going to like a national park.
Absolutely. I mean, and Chicago's an amazing city for it. We didn't have a landscape to speak of here. We had to create it ourselves. We're standing on a landfill right now, built off of the embers of the ashes of the fire.
Right.
We made what we have here. And I think that's pretty awesome.
All right, so you do a lot of teaching, and you're teaching now in Kalamazoo in Michigan, right?
Yes.
Give us a couple of tips. Like, what are some things that your students really struggle with, you find? You think, you know, that's one thing over and over I'm telling them, hey, don't forget to do this or whatever. What can you help us with a little bit?
I think anybody who wants to get serious about photography and get better has to seek out good photography and be looking at good photography all the time. Maybe not all the time. We all have lives here, but you have to pursue it with some seriousness. You can't just expect to hit some buttons and hope for the best, you know. The number one goal I have when I teach a class is I want the students to walk out of that class being able to repeat and get predictable results. It shouldn't be a surprise when the picture comes out exposed or in focus. That should be an expected result.
Right.
And the only way to do that is to shoot all the time, as much as you can. You have to practice. You have to practice, 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 and get to know the cameras like the back of your hand. You don't have to know the f-stop scale or what hyperfocal distance. You don't have to know any of that stuff. All the technical stuff is good to start off with as a solid foundation, but by the time you really get shooting, you're not thinking about it in those terms anymore anyway. This as a kind of a technical guy, but at the end of the day, it comes down to the picture you're producing, and you want to be able to...
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, you got to get the technicals down. You got to understand them so well that you don't even have to think about it anymore.
Right.
And I think I've heard like Rick Salmon or whatever on his podcast talk about that and say it's like, you know, if it's Eric Clapton or Jimi Hendrix or whoever, they're never thinking, oh, what chord is this? What note? What scale am I playing?
It just happens. What do I need to move my finger?
Yeah, it just happens.
The camera has to be an extension.
Exactly. All right, that's great advice. Now, one of the things you're known for are your large megapixel images. Tell us how you create these images.
Sure. I've been doing stitched photography and panoramics for most of the time I've been shooting. It started with those early cameras that I had, which were 1 megapixel, and at the time I just wanted bigger prints. And so I figured out how to take 4 pictures and stitch them together, and then take 10 pictures and stitch them together. And so I've been doing that. You know, the technology has advanced so much in the last 10 years. It's a lot easier now than it was. So it's accessible to everybody, which in some ways actually makes it more challenging. You have to, while everybody can go out and do it, now the challenge is to elevate yourself beyond everybody else.
And so you have.
Your vision has to remain your strongest tool. It's not about your camera. It's not about your software or your computer or anything like that. You have to be able to see the picture in your head before you go out and get it. That's really the only way to separate yourself from everybody else these days.
Yeah, and I think that you have. I mean, that surprises me sometimes when I see your compositions and I'm like, oh, that is just the perfect composition. And then to realize that you actually took like maybe 100 shots or whatever together to put into that. Most people, they're going to take that many shots. They're like, okay, let me just put myself in front of this thing and the camera's going to do the job. But you... And we just shot at the, I think they call it Agora, the statue with all the legs or whatever. And you got a shot in there. And it was fun to watch you. I was kind of standing behind you and see you line up and you move around. And I suppose anytime you're going to take a picture that's going to take 20 minutes or so for it to get all the images, you're going to take your time to make sure you're in the exact right spot. But it was kind of fun to see you take your time to do that, where a lot of people are like, okay, I'm here. Let's put the tripod down.
Yeah, you know, there's a time where you have to rush through things, you know. There's a time and a place for that. I don't take 20 minutes to find every shot. But there are times where you want everything to line up just right, and you have to pay attention to the little details. And I think that's one of those things that separates kind of beginner photographers from more serious professionals, you know. Mm-hmm. The pros look at every pixel of their image. They look for every leaf to be in the right place or every rock to be in the right place and everything to line up just perfectly right. It's especially true in architectural photography. You know, architects build buildings. They like lines to line up, and there's a real problem if they don't. From my former career, I got yelled at a lot when things weren't just so.
You know, I will complain about that a little bit, that I've been in some buildings. I'm sure you worked on them, too. I've been in some buildings where I'm like, man, I can't get this exactly symmetric. I can't get it quite vertical. And then I take a few more minutes, and I realize the building's not quite right. The building's a little bit off.
Yeah, that's not me.
That was you. That was you, I think. So... what's the equipment that you're using for these multi-images now?
I think if you're going to get serious about panoramas, you need a panorama head, which is a special tripod head that eliminates a lot of the problems in stitching these images together. You can get a cheap version. You can get a medium expensive version. You can get expensive. you know, it really runs from $75 into the thousands of dollars. I use an automated one called the Gigapan Epic Pro that somewhat automates the process. It's not like I just push one button and it does all the work.
Yeah, you just stand there and hit the button,
I still have to line up everything and program the different lenses that I'm using and tell it how many shots to take and how long to take the shots, all that kind of stuff. And I still have to see the scene, right? I still have to tell it where to aim. But it does the mundane part of moving just the right amount in between each image. It's not hard to do by hand, but the automation makes it a little bit easier.
And how many images do you typically take for a shot like that?
You know, it really all depends. There's certain shots that only require 4 or 5 shots, and there's other shots that require 200. It depends on how detailed I want it to be, what I think the viewing size will be, and how close people will be to it. These are all factors that go into that. How much time I want to spend on it. I mean, I could be walking down the street of Chicago, and I might not have the Gigapan with me because it's large and bulky. And so I'm not going to handhold the camera and try to take 200 shots. I'm just... There's going to be problems.
That do that, but yes. Uh-huh.
I do too, but there's going to be problems. I'm not going to be happy. So I'll take 4 or 5 there, and maybe that's a test image, and I'll come back later and do it more seriously. It was something, but a lot of times it turns out great. You know, the resolution on cameras these days is such that you can get away with not using as many pictures as you maybe once needed to.
And what's the main reason that you want to get such a high megapixel count that you're trying to... I mean, because some of the images look just like pictures that I've taken sometimes with one shot.
Yeah, I mean, I like my work to be displayed large and sharp. You know, you see a lot of large photos, and they break down. They're a little bit blurry when you walk up to them.
Absolutely.
I don't want that to be the experience when people look at my stuff. I shoot it at a resolution that you can walk right up to it, and it should be sharp. You might not be able to put your nose on the glass, but pretty darn close to it. And I think that provides a more immersive effect. I can turn on to that aspect of things when the Art Institute ran a Jeff Wall retrospective years ago. And I mean, he's an amazing photographer. Some of the photos I liked a lot, some I didn't. I had kind of a mixed reaction to the photos. But what I realized was viewing these pictures that were 12 feet tall and 20 feet long was more immersive than, you know, watching a 3D movie or something like that, because the picture at that point takes up your entire field of vision. The entire periphery is, you know, contained inside the photograph. And I got caught up in that notion. Size matters, I guess.
Well, a lot of people get lost in it. Like, I got to have a D800. I got to have whatever, you know, to get as many megapixels. But, I mean, I think
that's what you do with them.
Yeah, and I think the reason that you have them is legit. It makes sense. Now, for someone like, let's say, me, that wanted to get into doing Gigapan for the first time, maybe renting is the right option, but what would be a good setup? If I wanted to buy something to just kind of get into it, what would you recommend?
I started with the Panasaurus. It's a manual tripod head. It was $75 a few years ago. I haven't looked at the prices lately, but I bought the first generation of that
thing. It's not extinct?
It's not. It's on like generation 6 or 7
all
now.
Right, all right.
And it worked pretty well for me. It could get shaky in a windy day, but you know.
Okay. No, I don't want that. I want the Gigapan. I want it automated. I want to hit one button and it's done. Come on, John.
I'm working on that. I'm working on that.
No, but you did mention earlier that that maybe a good setup would be the smaller version of the Gigapan.
Yes, yeah, so there are 2 or 3 different sizes of the Gigapans. And one thing I have run into with the big SLR size Gigapan unit that I have is when I put a longer lens on it, like a 70-200 or even a 300mm lens, it can get a little shaky. It's not loose, it's not like falling apart on me, but it's just a little shakier than I would like it to be. I'd like it to be just a little tighter. So one thing I've told some friends is that if they're really thinking about it, I'd look at maybe some of these mirrorless cameras or even some of the high-end point-and-shoots that are still out there, like the Sony RX2, I think, is out. That's a fantastic camera. I would think about looking at those in a conjunction with the smaller Gigapan, because you won't have that weight issue that's kind of mm-hmm. moving things around. It'll be more sturdy.
And the Gigapan itself is probably smaller, and
it is.
The whole setup then
right.
is
smaller, more compact, more. It's easier to, you know, take out in the world with you.
And how much difference between your final image between that and what you're doing? Big, huge difference, or not a lot?
I think there will be a difference. Mm-hmm. I don't think the image quality is as good. Some of that goes away when you shrink things down. So maybe I wouldn't go full resolution on a small point-and-shoot camera. I would maybe go 60% the full size to bring out some additional sharpness artificially after the fact. But I still think full-frame SLRs are the way to go if you're gonna if you're really looking for the quality. I mean, short of large format film cameras or medium format digital backs, that I don't have $50,000 sitting around.
Sure you do. I know you do. So are you going to be teaching some of these things at the Out of Chicago conference this
Absolutely.
Summer?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're going to cover most of the aspects of panoramic photography. I'm going to talk about the gear you need, because I even have a cheaper solution than the ones I mentioned. We're talking about gear you need, like what you need to do to set up, like potential problems and how to fix them. But more importantly, how to use the techniques to be creative and push the limits of your photography. It's not just about big prints. I think people make that mistake a lot in panoramic photography. And maybe I should let them keep making it because it makes my stuff look better.
Your work does stand out.
But a lot of people, all they want to do is make the biggest possible image, and they don't spend a lot of time composing a shot or really thinking about any deeper meaning inside a shot or any of the relationship between the objects. It's just like, here's a billion pixels of Paris. Yay. And it's all washed out because they took it at the wrong time of day or whatnot. There's a better way. There's a better way. And I want the people walking away from the conference to realize just how creative you can be, like how you can stretch yourself out in just beyond the pixel count.
Yeah, I mean, one thing we haven't said here, I mean, you're going to be teaching panoramas, but that doesn't mean it's going to be super, super wide and hardly tall at all. It might be tall and not very wide, or it might be a square.
Well, it's everything.
It's how you put it together.
I use it. I use the same techniques to emulate lenses that can't possibly be made.
Yeah, what was the lens equivalent we had earlier at the statue?
A 9mm f/0.12.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I got a couple of those back in the car.
Yeah. So it's fun. I mean, you can be... It really... Your imagination is the only limit.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. If you guys... It's just so hard on an audio podcast like this. I mean, you guys got to see John's images. We're not talking about going out to the skyline and shooting a panorama of the skyline. We're talking about some really cool architectural abstract-type shots, a lot of details, and he's got quite the eye for it. But then you put that together with the way that he understands the technology and can use the technology to let him express his vision. I mean, it's wonderful. So thank you very much, John, for joining us. Tell us, where can we go to see some of those images?
You can go to my website, which is www.crouchphotos.com. And if you really want to see my, day-by-day, more informal stuff, check out my Flickr site. It's just flickr.com/crouch, C-R-O-U-C-H.
And we will have links to those in the show notes, so check that out. Please make sure that you sign up for the Out of Chicago conference to see John. He's going to be leading a photo walk as well, so it should be a great time. Thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Thank you, John.
So our last interview is with Nick Ulivieri, and Nick is known not so much for his abstract shots, but more for his kind of wide, scenic, epic shots of the city. And to make these as epic as they are, he includes a lot of weather with his shots. He's going to be speaking about shooting weather and lightning at the conference. So here we go, Nick Ulivieri. All right, welcome, Nick, to the Out of Chicago show. Thanks very much for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, yeah, of course. So, first, give us a little bit of background on your photography experience.
Well, I have been shooting professionally since 2010. I specialize in commercial photography, mainly with food. I work with a lot of food and restaurants in Chicago and a lot of real estate and interior designers. So I do a lot of architectural stuff. So Chicago is a great place to be if you're shooting food and architecture.
Yeah.
I do some other kind of random projects here and there, but that's, what the bulk of my my client work is made up of. What I like to shoot for fun is completely different, and I'm sure we'll kind of get into that in a few minutes here.
Yeah, I mean, most people know you for your great city shots and the great shots of the weather over the city.
Yes.
And all that. But actually, I didn't even know the depth of all this. That it sounds like most of the work that you're doing is actually for clients. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I don't share all that much on Facebook and Twitter just because it isn't you know, it's not quite as exciting. You know, sometimes I'll share my food shots and my interior shots, but, you know, as far as what I'm truly passionate about sharing, it really does have to do with, you know, the city and the wild array of weather that comes with it.
Right. But you are a full-time pro at this point. Is that right?
That is correct. I am
full-time. And how did that come about?
Well, you know, I kind of picked up photography as a hobby, actually in 2009. I had always been creative. Like, I always took art classes in high school, junior high. I mean, I was coloring on walls when I was a kid. So, you know, I always had a creative, you know, passion to make and create things. And, you know, it wasn't until I picked up a camera and, you know, started shooting that I finally realized that it was, like, the medium that I could really succeed in. And then, you know, at around the same time, I was working in PR and advertising, and I had majored in marketing in college. And, you know, the agency life really wasn't doing it for me. And I quickly realized that, you know, combining what I learned in school and what I learned on the job would mesh really well with my ability to take photos. So it's been really fun to help my clients, you know, improve their branding, improve their marketing, and really give them cool imagery for which they can promote, you know, their brands and products.
So are you actually helping with more than just providing photographs then? Is that what you're saying?
You know, to some degree, you know, I wouldn't call myself like a marketing consultant or anything like that. But, you know, the way I help kind of create shoots or create photos, you know, there's obviously a free flow of ideas. Very rarely do I show up for a shoot and a client and I just simply shoot what they ask me to. You know, a lot of times we meet to discuss what their goals are, you know, what type of imagery they want to create, what plans they have for that, because that really does kind of help me visualize the type of images I need to create. So, you know, in some degree, yes, you know, I am just creating photos, but at the same time, you know, the way I create photos really varies depending on what the goal of my clients are.
Yeah, I think that makes sense for any photographer, really, that it's not just, you know, what's the final image that you get. It all goes along. There's either a story that goes with it, or you're trying to sell something, or whatever it is. It all goes together, I think, right?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, so there's definitely a, you know, you kind of have to take a bigger approach to it than just, you know, what photo am I creating, or, you know, what exposure am I going to use? You know, where are we going to do this shoot? You know, it all kind of goes back to the goals of the clients and, you know, how your creative vision, you know, matches with what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and this is maybe a little deeper than I was planning to go, but it sounds like to really be successful with the job that you're talking about, a lot of people think, well, I just need to take great photos, but it sounds like you really got to be good with working with other people as well to get that final product just right.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you know, it's from things as simple as like scheduling shoots and, you know, working around, you know, their schedules and everything else that goes with running a business aside from, you know, just taking great photos. You know, as a self-employed photographer, you know, I have to do my own accounting, although I do work with an accountant, because if I didn't, I probably wouldn't still be in business. But, you know, there's a fair amount of accounting I have to do, you know, writing project proposals, figuring out, you know, all the logistics of a project. You know, that's a lot of times a good percentage of the work is done ahead of any photo you ever take. So really, you know, proper planning as well as follow-up really goes a long way to, you know, being successful in photography.
Yeah, it sounds like you're really good at that part of it too. So those of you that are out there that are thinking about going into this as more than just a hobby, remember there's a lot more to it than just taking photos.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So you're going to be presenting at the Out of Chicago Conference, and that is just a week away. Would you tell us a little bit about what you'll be presenting
sure.
at the conference?
Yeah, definitely. I can't believe it's only a week away. It sounds like
don't forget to show up. Yeah, it's,
I know,
it's a week away.
Oh my gosh. Well, so one of the things I love to shoot, you know, is weather. You know, storms and lightning, crazy skies, cool clouds. You know, whatever it may be, anything that isn't a plain blue, you know, puffy cloud sky, you know, I just can't get enough of. So what I'm going to be talking about is how I take my lightning photos. I'll kind of be going in depth into the different settings I use as well as some techniques. We'll get a little bit into kind of the meteorology of the types of photos I create. Now, I'm not a meteorologist, but You know, one of the things I have done over the past few years since I started doing this is a ton of research. So, while I'm no expert, understanding the subject has really helped me get better at it, and I'm going to try and pass some of that knowledge on.
Well, it's obvious from seeing you on social media, too. I mean, it's a big hobby of yours, understanding all the weather behind it.
Yes. And, you know, that's one thing that helps, and I think it could probably go for any subject a photographer shoots, but I think, you know, the more you know about it, the more familiar you are, you know, it only enhances your photography. So, you know, that's something that I've done a lot of work to kind of understand what I'm shooting and why it happens and how it happens, because that better prepares me for if and when, you know, certain phenomenon or weather patterns come together.
Yeah, I think that what you said, I mean, you're just dead on that. Even when we had Art Wolf on the other day and he's talking about, you know, shooting the animals, you got to know their behavior. And that's a huge part of it for whatever. I mean, maybe you're photographing kids. You need to understand what the kids are going to do.
Exactly.
So it applies to anything. And a lot of people starting out in photography, they think, well, I really need to understand f-stops and I really need to understand, you know, shutter speeds. But it's not that. You really need to understand your subject.
Yes, most definitely.
Give us a couple tips then as far as weather goes, for shooting it or even just kind of trying to predict it.
Well, let's see, where should I start? It's kind of tough to pick any one thing because there's so many, you know, there's obviously so many different types of weather patterns. And you know, obviously photography is capturing light and, you know, the lighting totally varies from storm to storm, from day to day, from time of day. So I think it's probably kind of a little too vague, but, you know, it's really to observe what's happening. You know, when you see clouds starting to build or you hear rumbles of thunder, you know, it's important to kind of just watch the skies and really get an idea for, you know, how light behaves in certain conditions. Because, you know, there was a point when I used to be surprised by rainbows, right? Like, oh,
sure.
There's a rainbow. But
oh, I got,
you know,
so lucky, right?
Right. It's gotten to a point where now I know the rain's passing. I've seen on radar that the cell's about to pass and that on the visible satellite that clouds are starting to clear in the back, you know, and it's still raining, you know, out to the east. As soon as that sun comes out, you know, there could be a really good rainbow there. So, you know, it goes back to the point that the more you know about your subject, the better prepared you are to shoot any particular phenomenon should it occur, because you can better predict it now. Like
that
I
makes
said,
a lot of sense. Yeah,
I'm not an expert. I know a couple things, and even experts, you know, weather's a very hard thing to predict, but I've had a lot of success by following meteorologists on Twitter, Facebook as well. There's a lot of great resources, you know, from like NOAA and a lot of, you know, local forecasters can, you know, provide a lot of insight, especially if you ask them on Twitter. A lot of them are pretty excited to kind of talk about weather. So if you engage them, you know, that can help you learn more. And again, it better prepares you for, you know, coming storms or what other interesting weather phenomena might be coming into the area.
Yeah, so let's say that you're thinking about waking up early one morning,
sure,
for sunrise. You know, so you'll usually be on Twitter, you'll be checking the night before, you'll be checking these sites to see what the prediction is. Is that the idea?
Yeah, and, you know, sunrise is a tough one because as I've learned, to try and predict what cloud types are going to be where is really tough. You know, my ideal sunrise would have a nice high altitude cloud kind of out to the west and maybe above my general area, so that when the sun rises, it illuminates the underside of those clouds and, you know, these beautiful red and orange glow.
Right.
But that's really tough to predict. You know, so sunrise is one that is a little bit more hit or miss. You know, obviously with sunset, you can kind of observe the cloud patterns throughout the day. You can see if you have high altitude clouds coming in. You know, so sunset's a much easier to shoot well. But yeah, for sunrise, you know, that's one I might ask a meteorologist, like, hey, you know, I'd like to shoot sunset in the next few days. Like, any thoughts on, you know, a good time, you know, and sometimes just simply reading the weather report in depth, you know, will kind of give you a few clues as to what mornings might be. You know, so really it is kind of taking a lot of little bits of information from various sources. And, I mean, really, a lot of times it's a judgment call. There are times where sunset looks like it's going to be awesome, and you know the clouds are great, the sun's getting pretty close to the horizon, but 20, 30 minutes later, you know, the convection has ceased and the clouds kind of just basically disappear and you're left with a clear blue sky. But, you know, the important part is that you did get in the position, you found a good spot, and you did the work to get to where you needed to be should the sky have really, you know, just looked awesome. So, you know, a lot of times with the weather, it's you're just taking a gamble, hoping it's going to look good.
So really the key is just get out there, you know, and get out there as many times as you can to give yourself as many chances to get that shot.
It really is, you know, because there's only a handful of really just, you know, stellar sunsets or sunrises throughout the year that, you know, just, you know, make your jaw drop. So, you know, the more often you're out shooting and, you know, the more you begin to understand weather patterns, the better chance you have success. But you know, the one downfall about, you know, wanting to get better weather photos is that it's completely out of your control. So the only thing you can control is being out there and being in the right position, and you know, you just have to cross your fingers that you know, all the conditions come together and give you the, you know, the sky show you're looking for.
Yeah. Now you're going to talk about shooting lightning as well. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
So talk a little bit about that.
That's probably going to be my, you know, the biggest part I'm going to spend my time on, because lightning, I just think it's so cool to photograph. You know, the patterns are crazy. Just the formation of lightning itself has fascinated me for some time. So, I mean, really the big key to lightning photography is patience, persistence, and a long exposure. You know, aside from that, obviously Mother Nature has to cooperate. You know, the storm has to be strong enough, and you have to have enough you know, power in the storm to create the lightning. So yeah, like I was saying, a long exposure is really, really your key. And it's a lot harder to do in the day for a handful of reasons, and I'll probably go into much more detail on that during the conference. But
yeah, I think that if people really want to learn, that they should come to the conference, of course.
Yeah,
and of
definitely.
Course, we're encouraging that. I have one huge question though, because I feel like as far as the settings and everything, I feel like I could totally shoot lightning. I feel like I got that down. But here's my big question for you.
Yes.
How do you find yourself a position where you're going to feel safe to stand out there and shoot it and not feel that you're in any danger of getting hit by lightning?
I don't know if I could guarantee that. You know, obviously you want a covered position would be great. You know, balconies, porches, you know, you are taking a risk. You know, that's something that is always, you know, in the back of my mind when I'm out shooting. I'm generally not ever really, I've never been anywhere just completely out in the open. You know, a lot of my shooting's done on my balcony when the storms are coming in from the south, because I have a really clear wide view of the southern sky. But my door's usually cracked open. You know, I'm a half step away from my door. If, you know, things are starting to get close or it's getting crazy, it's really easy to get inside and get protected.
And you said everyone's invited to your place, is that what you said?
Oh, someday, yeah. You know, it's funny sometimes, you know, as much as I want to get out and shoot in other areas and different vantage points, it's really tough to predict if a storm's going to produce good lightning worth shooting. So, you know, oftentimes I'll be watching the radar, you know, trying to make a call, and then I'll hear a rumble of thunder, I'll see some lightning in the distance, and I feel like I can't leave. It's on its way. I don't know where I should go. So it's tough to, it's always been tough for me, and I imagine probably other people, to kind of like, it's very hard to plan, you know, accordingly for a shoot like this. It all kind of usually comes together, you know, an hour or so before the storm really approaches.
But it sounds like if you're prepared, you know how to shoot it, you know what you're doing, and you get yourself in a location where it might work, that's what you got to do, and you give yourself a chance.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, giving yourself a chance is, you know, 99% of the work, because if you have your settings, if you kind of know what your settings are going to be, all you need is for your shutter to be open when that lightning strikes. So, you know, the patience to wait there when a storm's coming in, to keep clicking the shutter, to, you know, move the camera as the storm moves either from east to west or, you know, towards or away from you. As long as that shutter's open and you put yourself in the right position, it's kind of easy, you know, but it's all that kind of pre-work and making sure your settings are right that can be tough. But
yeah. Yeah, you know, there's a ton of other things we could talk about, but I think we'll have to have you on again in the future.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to having you at the conference this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to make sure I sit in and learn how to shoot lightning and other weather with you.
I will be covering a few other things other than just lightning as well. So
got some surprises.
You know how to
up
shoot lightning?
Good.
Yeah, I guess we could say that.
No, it's good. Well,
yeah.
What else were you going to say there, though?
Oh no, I just wanted to make sure. We'll mention that it was going to be more than just lightning. We're going to go into some different types of cloud types, as well as you know, how to read basic radar, things like that, just to kind of give people a primer into, you know, what I'm looking at before I start shooting a storm. It's like I said, it's one thing to have your settings right and be in the right position, but you know, a lot of times the research and kind of pre-planning is really what gets you set up for success.
Absolutely. Kind of sounds like it's the same thing with when you're working with clients. So mm-hmm. Yeah, you really got that figured
out.
Lots
of work before and after that most people don't ever see. That's, I think, really what where the success comes from.
Well, good. I'm really looking forward to your presentation. And what are you thinking for your photo walk?
Well, I was thinking of going over to not quite museum campus. I kind of want to explore a little bit, you know, kind of closer to McCormick Place down Indiana. Maybe the Prairie Avenue Historic District. I'm not really sure yet. I think it's going to kind of come together more that day. Depends on the weather, of course.
No, that's exactly right. But then people get to see into, you know, how you go about your normal adventure. So I think that's good.
Exactly.
Well, great. So tell us, where can we go to see some of these photos you're talking about and follow your work?
Well, there's a bunch of different places you could go. I would probably have you go to my Facebook page. It's facebook.com/NUphotography. I posted a lot of cool storm and weather shots as of late, so you can see them there. And there's links in those posts to my Flickr page where there are tons of photos. So that's probably the best place to see you know, my weather work or my Instagram. My Instagram feed's kind of got a bunch of those in there lately
well,
as
you know,
well.
We'll put links to all these in our show notes, and people can go check them all out. I know you do a lot on social media, so people will love
awesome.
To follow you on all of them. So. So that's
Sounds
great.
Good.
All right. Thank you so much, Nick, for joining
thank
us.
You.
Really appreciate it. And we'll see
Thanks
you this
a bunch.
Weekend.
Sounds good. Thanks, see Nick. You, Chris.
Bye-bye. Bye. So there you have it. All three interviews. Thank you to Angie McMonagle, John Crouch, and Nick Ulivieri. All three of them awesome photographers in their own right. And all three of them just going to be great at the conference this weekend. So we will see you there. For a lot of you guys, I'm looking forward to meeting you for the first time. And for a lot of you others, you know it's going to be fun. We're going to have fun hanging out. And I'm looking forward to seeing you again. So see you guys this weekend at the conference. For the podcast, that's the end. Have a good night. And we'll see you next week.
All right. That was amazing.
Did that suck?
No, that was so good.